You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene podcast, and this week, the last podcast of the year, we're going to be looking back at the year. I'm here with Phil Yates. I'm Dave Hendler, by the way. Of course, Phil, we don't normally talk in terms of years, we talk in terms of seasons, but it's been an interesting 2021. It started, of course, with everything behind closed doors, as we know. Felt quite strange to have the Masters, which has always been about the crowd in London, behind closed doors, but it ended on a high with a great story, Yan Bing Tao winning the tournament.
Well, it was the fact he won the tournament and also how he won it. He won three really, really close finishes to get to the final, and then everyone assumed the vast experience of John Higgins would prevail in the final, but Yan came good. My abiding memory of that Masters is, of course, Yan's very big break, which was a superb effort, but also that one frame, I believe it was against Neil Robertson, where every single colour was on the cushion. It was the most bizarre frame. And although Yan's lead wasn't substantial in terms of the actual numbers, you thought, there's no way Robertson can win this frame. It really was one of the most unusual, unconventional frames I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and you saw in those two instances, you saw the two sides of him. You saw that ultra-tactician when he had to be, when he got in front in a frame, he knew how to close it down. You know, and not everyone of his age has that skill. And then, as you say, against Maguire, one with a 1-4-1 in the deciding frame, his highest break, beat Bingham in a decider. And John Higgins, I mean, he had chances in that final and he missed a few. But Yan Bing Tao, he had won a ranking event, of course, he won the Riga Masters. But this is such a huge event to stand tall. It's sort of, we'll talk obviously later about Xiao Jing Tong, but in a way, the year is sort of bookended by the authentic rise now of young Chinese talent.
As a neutral who wants to see the growth of the game worldwide, I think Yan Bing Tao winning the Masters was a really, really good thing. Because obviously, and you can't deny this, Ding is on the decline. Let's hope that he can reverse that decline and get back where he was. But he is on the decline at the moment. And so the interest in China, there was a chance it could have possibly waned. But then along came Yan. Now, he's not a one-hit wonder, as you say. He'd won a ranking event before. In fact, he came very, very close to breaking Ronnie O'Sullivan's record as the youngest ever ranking event winner. And when he was 15 years of age, in partnership with Zhou Yulong for China B, they won the World Cup. So he'd done things before. But to win that Masters, I think it showed that, for Chinese snooker's sake, it isn't just a one-man show. Ding isn't the only game in town in terms of potential tournament winners.
Yeah, and that's significant, hopefully, for when we do go back to China. The German Masters was not in Germany. It was also in Milton Keynes. The final was a washout. Trump beat Lazowski 9-2. The key sort of match for Trump was the semi-final. He was 5-1 down to Barry Hawkins, and he played what was voted online the shot of the season. I'm sure people have seen that green he potted. I mean, it was inconsequential in terms of the frame was well won, of course. But he said it got him going, and it went viral and all the rest of it. And he got through to the final and then overwhelmed Jack, and it was another title. He seemed to spend more time than anyone in Milton Keynes did last year.
Yeah, I think he enjoyed it. And, of course, at the time he was on a really good streak. Just going back to that semi-final with Hawkins, Barry's a great match player, but he has occasionally lost matches in big tournaments from well ahead, most notably when he was 5-0 up on Nigel Bond in the UK Championship and was beaten 6-5. Now, losing 6-5 from 5-0 up, as you know, Dave, is a real rarity. So there was that seed of doubt in his mind as Trump came back at him. And, of course, Trump can reel off frames very quickly, as Ronnie O'Sullivan did at the World Grand Prix recently. So that was quite intimidating. With regard to the shot, I'm not a great one for picking out individual shots. It wasn't the most important shot of the year. It wasn't the most important shot of the match or even the frame. But I will say, for me, it was the most spectacular shot I've ever seen, ever. It was just brilliant, and it definitely deserved to be voted shot of the season, definitely.
I've just got the frame scores up here. So Hawkins, he went 5-1 up with 140 in that sixth frame. Trump had 131, 131, 100. Three successive frames. So Barry already is bang under it, thinking he's going to, you know, be one visit every frame. It wasn't quite like that in the last two, but yeah, it underlined, you know, his dominance of tournaments that, you know, okay, they're not regarded as the absolute blue ribbon, but, you know, they're all worth winning, and he won that one, and we'll come on to another success of his in a moment. But the next one, again, Milton Keynes, the shootout. Now, that was a strange event. I'll talk about the Masters, and we missed the crowds there, but the shootout has always been about crowd interaction. I mean, actually, it's one of the reasons some people don't like it, is because the crowd gets sort of a bit leery and a bit drunk at times. But it was a big win for Ryan Day. You know, Ryan was cascading down the ranking list. He needed something, and I'm sure he would be honest to say he needed the money as well. You know, the 50,000 was a real tonic. But what was interesting for me, you know, Ryan Day is one of those people you think, yeah, he's a kind of shootout player in a way. Mark Selby getting to the final. That was interesting because you would not associate him with that format.
No, I think it goes to prove that what they say about the shootout is correct. Literally anything can happen. Selby, not suited to it, as you say, but it was a very useful source of world ranking points and he came very close to winning it. The other thing they say about the shootout, which is incorrect, is that anyone can win it. And you look at the Roll of Honour, and that's proved completely incorrect. Because what you've got is a set of players. OK, it might not be the elite players, but they're all very, very capable, that Roll of Honour, the past winners. They're all maybe former top 16 players, but players you know are extremely capable. And with Ryan Day, definitely fits the bill. The likes of Martin Gould, Dominic Dale, Michael Holt, the previous year, they all fit into that strata, don't they?
No, I mean, listen, I've commentated on it the last few years. There's definitely people who cannot win it because they're pretty clueless about the tactics and they panic and, you know, you need to keep a cool head. Of course, it'll be in Leicester, fingers crossed, in 2022. Now, then, really, one of the stories of the year was the Welsh Open, which was in Wales. We went to the Celtic Manor in Newport. And no crowd again, but it was played in Wales. Jordan Brown, I mean, not just to win it. That's a big story in itself. He's down in the 80s in the rankings. But the last three matches, he beat Mark Selby, he beat Steve Maguire, and of course, in the final, he beat Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Well, the Mark Selby match was just so thrilling, wasn't it? It was right down to the wire. Then, of course, beating Steve Maguire is no mean feat. He's a real class act, Maguire. I will say this. People often ask me, you know, what's the biggest shock you've ever seen in snooker? And it's very difficult to quantify, and of course it's all subjective. I would definitely say that Jordan Brown winning that final against O'Sullivan was the biggest shock to me in a final. Okay, people might say Joe Johnson beating Steve Davis in 86, but Johnson was a member of the top 16 at the time and a very capable sort who played some lovely snooker to get there. Jordan was, apart from people who are really in the know with snooker, to the general sporting public, pretty much unknown. And to beat such two big names to get to the final and then overcome O'Sullivan, who was desperate to win it, I think that was just a monumental upset, don't you, Dave?
Totally, yeah. And I think, excuse me, had that been the first event that played behind closed doors, people would have said, oh, well, you know, there's no crowd, so it's a leveller. But every other event had been won by a top player. So he definitely deserved it. The win over Selby was a sort of last gasp, fall over the line job. But against Maguire, he came out first frame, made a massive break, played brilliantly, actually. It was probably his best performance was in that match. And then against O'Sullivan, stood tall, he made a break to win it in the decider. you know, just fantastic, actually, to see that. And that will inspire and has inspired a lot of players down the list who will say, listen, it can happen. You know, things, the stars can align. He won, I think, 5 deciders in 7 matches. I'm sure roadies look at times as well. But a great, great win for a great guy. Jordan's a real snooker lover. You know, he ordered the Crucible Almanac. That'll tell you how much he loves snooker. And it was great to see. And people have said, oh, well, you know, he's not really backed it up since. Listen, give him a chance. It's actually only his 4th season on tour, that was. I know he's in his 30s, but he'd spent a long time off tour. He was working in that petrol station. And I think even Ronnie O'Sullivan fans, who are quite diehard, as we know, were happy for him. Because, you know, he put all the hard yards in. And good luck to him.
He was working in that petrol station, and it was just his luck that Alan Partridge never came in for a ginster. But, I was going to say exactly the same thing. It's irrelevant, really, isn't it, what the personality of a player is when they win a tournament. They've won it, and that's great for them. But Jordan really is a good guy, and he loves his snooker. A little story about Milton Keynes. When you're behind closed doors in those bubbles, obviously it's quite a community, even more so than normal. And I remember one occasion I was in the commentary box prepping for that day, and the door opened. There it was, Jordan. He said, do you mind if I borrow your almanac? And he went away for half an hour looking at all of those arcane stats about the Crucible. And I'm thinking, he's my kind of guy.
He's one of us. Now, arguably the performance of the year in a tournament came at the Players' Championship. Again, we were back at Milton Keynes. John Higgins lost 4 frames. But not only that, I mean, in terms of an all-round display, match play, you know, good safety, heavy scoring as well, made loads of breaks. You struggle to see anything better than that, wouldn't you?
Dave, I don't very often disagree with you, but I think the word arguably was redundant. That was the best performance, not of the season, not of the year. That's the best performance to win a tournament I've ever seen, ever. Just not even close. I mean, the guy was simply sensational. Of course, Jordan had just won the Welsh Open. He came to the Players' Championship. It was a bit of a baptism of fire for him. Higgins beat him 6-0, but the match we'll always remember was the match against Mark Selby next time out. Selby. Now, I have to sort of say this out loud to remind myself. Selby scored in that match to lose 6-0. 7 points. Mathematically, what are the odds of that? I mean, that to me is close to 1,000,000 to 1. And what people don't remember is that in his next match against Kyron Wilson, he went 4-0 up and pretty much did the same thing to Wilson.
I remember the 4th frame, I was in the media centre because I was waiting to go and commentate after the interval. And Higgins, say he was 51 in front with 43 on. OK, so Selby needed a couple of snookers already. And Higgins had potted a red. And he was close to the black. He could have potted it to the yellow pocket or he could roll up to it. That's what we were saying. What's he going to do? He's going to pot it to the yellow pocket or roll up to it. What he did was he put it on the side cushion. He's saying, right, the shop's shut. You're not coming in. The shutters are down. You know, that's it. And then, of course, in the final against O'Sullivan, I think he knew he had to score heavily, and he did. And it was incredible. And all because he kind of moved his hand closer to the white, right? That seemed to be what he said.
Well, after that tournament, he went up to a slab of granite and said, you're quite soft, aren't you? It was just the most extraordinary thing I've seen. Actually, of course, again, it was a behind-closed-door scenario, and we were all leaving the hotel at Milton Keynes, and I went to my room, unpacked, and went to my car, and on the way out, there he was waiting for the lift, John, and it was away from the cameras, it was away from all the media room and all that kind of stuff. And what you must remember about John is he's such a modest individual. Mm. And I said to him, John, that's the best I've ever seen you play. And he said, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Now, he knew I wasn't going to sort of, you know, heap praise on him like, you know, just for no reason. It was just the truth. He played absolutely brilliantly that week. I can't imagine he could play any better. I can't imagine anyone could play any better.
Absolutely. Although, having said that, of course, the next event, Gibraltar Open, which again was in Milton Keynes, Judd Trump actually only lost 3 frames. And that he seems to be the master of the best of 7. You know, he'd won that event the year before. They're all best of 7, those matches. He had a great run against Matt Selt in the semis, it's got to be said. But then again, he beat Jack Lazowski 4-0. And again, had the intensity for a tournament that a lot of people would not regard as a big one. He wants to win everything. And that's, you know, let's not forget, he won 5 tournaments last season.
That mindset is really laudable for me, because every tournament is important. If you win a ranking title, it really does mean something. And I don't think he grades them. I think he goes into them, obviously, definitely the World Championships on a pedestal, and clearly it should be. But I think he goes into every single tournament with the same approach and the same incentive. He wants to win it to add to his total, and I think that's great. Yeah, to win a ranking tournament for the loss of only three frames is superb, and it was one of the best performances of the season. The thing with Higgins, though, was it wasn't just the amount of frames he lost in the tournament, it was the amount of points he actually restricted his opponents to. That was the striking thing. But, yeah, Judd's a winning machine, and I'm sure he'll be back to winning ways soon.
I don't think the Pro Series... I haven't seen people in the streets campaigning for it to come back. It served a purpose. It got players playing. It got snooker streamed. It was wallpaper, really. Let's be honest. It was kind of interminable. Mark Williams won it on his birthday. Good luck to him. I mean, listen, best of three is their cutthroat. But well done to him. But I'm going to move on. And now, I don't know what you think, but obviously the World Championship, I think, is everyone's favourite tournament, understandably. I think now, for me, in terms of working on it and watching it, the Tour Championship is probably second in terms of what I enjoy. You get one match a day. You know they're going to be top players. It's a top eight in the world. It's an achievement to get in that event. You feel like you've won something to get in it. And I remember the semi-final that I commentated on, the end of Ronnie O'Sullivan beating Barry Hawkins. That was an absolute thriller. He was 9-6 down, won 10-9. And, of course, Neil Robertson turned him over in the final five centuries. But it's a terrific event. And when the crowds come back, that tournament can only grow.
Well, Barry Hearn has had a lot of good ideas. And I think the Kazoo Series, as he's called now, is one of those. It really does reward the elite players. Everyone, of course, starts on the same playing field in terms of all the world ranking events. So everyone's got the same chance of being there. And the Tour Championship is the reward for season-long consistency. So that's great. I think the format is simply superb. And the fact it's two-session matches, that really does mean something, because, of course, the UK Championship used to be that. It is no more, apart from the final, of course. And the players respond to it. You listen to them, Dave, throughout the season. They say, yeah, the aim is to be at the Tour Championship. Now, as we're talking here, just before Christmas, Mark Selby, I believe, is 17th on the one-year list. So he's not yet in the Players' Championship. Now, his big goal is to get there to facilitate getting into the Tour Championship. It means an awful lot to these players. And if you think about the history of snooker in the last 20 years, a new tournament coming on the scene and making an impact like the Tour Championship, well, I don't think we've had one, have we? So I'm a great fan of it. On ITV, we've got a fantastic portfolio of tournaments. The Champion of Champions is something special, but for me, I'm with you. The big one is the Tour.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare it to football, you know, we like the FA Cup is for everyone. It's the plucky underdog and all the rest of it with the big boys. But then you've got something like the Champions League, which is an elite event. And there's something to be said in sport for elite events. You know you're watching the best of the best. I think World Snooker have missed a trick so far in promoting that event. I think they could do far better building that up. It didn't help that Pro Series finishing the day before. We didn't even know who was playing who until the night before. That's got to change. That's a huge event. And certainly just before the World Championship as well. You know, it's a very important time of the season. So hopefully this season, that tournament will be given a bit more respect. Kyron Wilson won the Championship League. He made a record number of centuries, didn't he? 23, I think it was, in the tournament. And did the famed Championship League double. He'd won the ranking event version, and he won the invitation event. And then, of course, we went to the Crucible, and it ended with crowds, and it ended on a high, and it ended with Mark Selby winning his fourth world title. I'm going to say this about that Selby, because I've heard people already repeat the idea that he sort of ground his way to victory. He came out in that first match against Kurt Mafflin swinging at everything. He potted everything. He won 10-1. He beat Mark Allen 13-7, by far the better player in that match. He beat Mark Williams 13-3. So to reach the semis, he'd hardly broken sweat. Obviously, then it did become a dogfight with Bingham, and it was a tough match with Murphy as well. But, you know, he displayed all the assets you need to win that tournament, and I personally think that won't be his last world title.
Well, I'm with you there. Over the years, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because the World Championship is watched by more casual fans than the other tournaments, over the years, misconceptions have come out of the Crucible. For me, the classic one is that Graham Dott is a slow player, because when he won the 2006 Championship, the final was slow against Peter Ebdon, and it finished late because it started late because of BBC scheduling that I don't think anyone agreed with. So that's a misconception. He's not a slow player at all, Graham. The other misconception is that Selby, as you say, ground his way to that title, and he got some very unwanted criticism. There were a couple of involved sessions against Bingham, yes, no doubt. But to get there, I thought he played brilliantly, and I thought he played very nicely in the final as well. I use this word advisedly. Mark Selby is a great champion. When I was playing snooker, I would have loved to have had his fight, his bottle, his tactical awareness, and his desire to win. He's got so many assets that I think every snooker player should aspire to. He's dedicated, he's a good guy, he's a good ambassador for the game. And he played very well overall in that World Championship. And to be honest, I think some of the criticism and the stick he got was disgraceful.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, of course, it's a series of matches there, but it's also a series of sessions. And Selby has that knack, and Mark Williams had it as well, or still does, of being able to play not at his best, play bad at times, and come out of a session 4-each when someone else would lose it 6-2. And what that means is, if he then plays well in the next session, you know, he's well placed to actually take control of the match. But as I say, he was very positive. I know he'd been working with Chris Henry. Of course, he'd had a nightmare the year before losing to O'Sullivan in the semis the way he did. But to turn it round, fantastic. He is, you know, we talk about crucible players. I don't think anyone would doubt he is suited for that format. It's a test, not just obviously of your game, but of your temperament, and he's got one of the best there. And we saw as well, of course, Sean Murphy, he sort of illustrated the difference crowds make coming back, because they definitely helped him. He turned that match around against Karen Wilson, got them on his side. There were great scenes at the end, you know, to have the people back. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in the next few months in tournaments, because things have changed again. But, you know, it was a real high and a real reminder that, you know, that tournament stands alone.
Yeah, Murphy should be applauded, there's no doubt, because he played some wonderfully entertaining snooker and he got the crowd involved. And to be honest, the way he played was very reminiscent of when he won the championship as a complete outsider in 2005. Some of his potting from distance was amazing. I thought, actually, he would gain an awful amount of confidence from the way he played at the World Championship, but so far this season, it's not really translated into the new campaign, but I'm sure he's going to be back and lifting trophies soon. What I will say, though, just wrapping all of this up, is you talked about the Pro Series, best of three. No good. Lottery. Best of sevens, they are meaningful, but the long matches, the Tour Championship and the World Championship, for me, that's where it's at.
I should say, for the second half of this, you may be able to hear in the background Leicester riders just warming up and practising, as they're entitled to, because we are at their venue here in Leicester. So if you can hear any baskets dropping, as I believe the technical term is, Phil, then that's what it'll be.
Yeah, but this podcast will be a slam dunk from here.
There we are. Well, speaking of slam dunks, as we were, Dave Gilbert. Now, of course, he won the first event of the new season in this very venue, in fact, Championship League. I think everyone's happy for him. He's the opposite of a lot of sports people. A lot of people are quite full of themselves. He's the opposite. He's always been self-deprecating. So it was nice to see someone as grounded as that, been at it as long as that, win a trophy.
Yes, and he must have been absolutely sick to the back teeth of people like you and I in the media asking him, is he going to win his first ranking event? Does he believe he's the best player still waiting to win one? All that kind of stuff. Because clearly it was either him or Jack Lazowski, I think, in everyone's mind. So to get that ticked off was fantastic. I felt actually quite emotional for him. I commentated on the final. It was a strange one, actually. It was one of those rare tournaments, and I think Dave would be the first to agree with this, where in terms of the overall standard in the event, he wasn't the best player. Mark Allen was absolutely brilliant to open the season. He made 10 centuries in that Championship League. But in the final, Gilbert was the better.
Yeah, and on the 91, it was Mark Selby was having a party, wasn't he, to celebrate his World Championship and I think his wedding anniversary. And Dave's wife and everyone, all their friends were at that, so he rocked up with the trophy. That must have been great walking in with that. And I noticed on sort of social media for a good 2 weeks afterwards, he seemed to be with the trophy all the time. It obviously meant a lot to him. And of course, then everyone was back here at the Morningside for the British Open, first staging since 2004. You know, there was controversy about the length of matches. Obviously, they were very short early on, but it seemed to me a good sort of summer tournament, that, for snooker fans. It was, you know, a lot of different matches, a lot of different faces. And an old face, I think we can say, in terms of Mark Williams as the winner.
Well, he kept talking down his chances, as always being very self-deprecating. I'm just here to win a match. But in the end, he ended up lifting the trophy. He played very well as well to do so. Pulled away from 4-each with Gary Wilson in the final to win 6-4. Really, that tournament was all about the class of 92. Yes, Williams winning it, but also with his first shot, literally his first shot, John Higgins making a 147. That was a remarkable effort.
Yeah, and I think also just on the format, I mean, Mark Williams should have been beaten at least three times probably along the way, but just shows you whatever the format, you've got to get over the line, and people couldn't against him. And that's the case whether it's best of five, best of nine, best of 11, best of 19, best of whatever. It's always the same old story. We had then quite a long gap because, of course, the Turkish Masters were supposed to be on. It wasn't. It'll be on later in March, of course. There was sort of endless qualifying, which did seem endless, but we eventually ended up in Belfast. And, well, what a story this was. Mark Allen on home soil. A great match with John Higgins, first and foremost, regardless of where they were and what it meant to Mark. A great match, but just a great story. You know, a real kind of, you could see what it meant to him. It wasn't just, I've won a tournament, I've won it here in the streets where I grew up.
Yeah, Mark Allen is an absolutely tremendous player. He's got terrific touch. He's a prolific scorer, and I believe he could win any tournament he enters. The one tournament I always thought he might struggle to win was the Northern Ireland Open, purely and simply because, as you say, it meant so much to him. There have been occasions in the past where he's gone into matches against significantly lower-ranked players, and he looked consumed with nerves because he's playing in front of his own family and friends. And I thought that could be a barrier that might be difficult to negotiate. But in that tournament, wow, as you say, what a story. Commiserations, though, to John Higgins. He did play very, very well. And everyone recalls the black he missed off the spot. Now, you think, in its terminology, black off its spot. But it wasn't an easy ball. The cue ball was very close to the right-hand side cushion as you're looking at the table on your TV screens. And he actually caught it pretty well. It just wobbled in the jaws. Now, had that black gone, he would probably have won. And the whole narrative of the season would have been rewritten. But congratulations to Mark Allen to win there under so much, well, self-imposed pressure, was a great achievement.
And of course Higgins had the same unfortunate reversal, didn't he, against Neil Robertson. 8-6 up, lost 9-8 in the English Open final at Milton Keynes. I mean, there's no disgrace losing to Neil Robertson over any distance, but I suppose the disappointment for John, and it was clear afterwards, is multiplied by the fact he'd lost in the previous final as well.
Yes, and, you know, he is a winner. He's used to winning, and when you're used to lifting trophies and doing what you want to do, when you suffer disappointment, it becomes all the more acute. Obviously, if he'd been to a load of finals and not won many of them, then it becomes, well, not customary, but it's easier to take. I think, though, with Robertson, you have to say now, and it's been this for a while, the finest player ever to come out of a country other than the UK and Republic of Ireland. I mean, what a career record he's putting together. And you just know, with his abilities, with his dedication, with his cue action, with his scoring, you know that he's going to significantly add to the total of titles he's already won.
Yeah, although, and we'll come back to this later, it's interesting, and this ties into our last event, which we'll come to. Ronnie O'Sullivan was doing the punditry. If you watch on the Eurosport app, you can listen to Ronnie and Jimmy between frames, giving their opinions. And of course, Robertson got the lead in that final and then fell behind. And he said, Ronnie said, that he feels Neil sometimes isn't clinical enough when he's in front. Now, of course, we'll come back to that because that's significant later on. But in the meantime, of course, we went to Bolton. Now, this was a new venue for the Champion of Champions. A new look for it as well, new clothing, and they tried a few innovations as well. And what was also new was that Judd Trump won it. Now, he'd always felt kind of like Champion of Champions, he's won so many tournaments, but finally actually won the tournament.
Yeah. What I'll remember about the Champion of Champions, I thought the venue was a lot better than I thought it might be. The crowds were really good. The atmosphere was terrific. And I think the whole ethos of the tournament is just special. What I'll remember about Judd Trump's victory there was, yes, of course, he built breaks. He knocked in wonderful pots. But some of these safety play and tactical nous in the crunch in important matches was right up there with the very best. That's what I'll remember, my abiding memory of that tournament.
Yeah, he's learned that game, for sure. And, okay, he hasn't sort of come to life, particularly in the other events this season, but I know that he wanted to win that one. He'd had some input into actually the sort of the cosmetics of it, and he wanted to change things up. It wasn't all successful, that, but I mean, Emily Fraser from Matchroom Multisport came on the podcast and said that. She said, listen, we're going to go back, look at what worked, look at what didn't work, and next year we'll come back and make the improvements. And you've got to respect that. Of course, Higgins' third final in a row that he didn't win. He took this one a little bit better, though, because it was 10-4. And, you know, he wasn't like he had a sort of chance to win it at the end. UK Championship. You know, we've almost saved the best for last, haven't we? Because this was a remarkable tournament, remarkable story. Zhao Jingtong, player that, you know, snooker folk had known about. The wider public probably hadn't. But they certainly have taken to him.
Yeah, I did his match against Peter Lyons. I think it was in the last 16. And although he won that match, at no point did I think he's going to go on and win this tournament, because he'd made an awful lot of mistakes. Yes, there was brilliance intermingled in there, but he'd made a lot of mistakes. But as the tournament went on, he became better and better and better. And of course, he came up against Luca Brasel in the final. Now, Brasel, in my mind, had produced his finest single performance in the semi-finals. He was absolutely outstanding. He played better in that match than at any time when he won in China, his first ranking event. And I thought Brasel was probably just shading it for favouritism, but Zhao in the final, it was as though he didn't fully comprehend the significance and the magnitude of what he was trying to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, just on the Brasel semi-final against Karen Wilson, I mean, that's as good as anyone can play. That's one of the performances of the whole year, without question. But it's interesting, going into the final, you almost feel maybe he would have been better off playing, actually, a big hitter and be the underdog, because he was maybe even slight favourite going in the way he played, and that brings its own pressure. It's a big title. But you've got to credit Zhao, and it's great to see a new face. We started the year with a young Chinese player, Yang Bingtao, winning the Masters. We've ended it with Zhao winning the UK Championship. But credit to Luca, because then, of course, he went to Llandudno, that well-known Scottish city, for the Scottish Open. Not easy to sort of pick yourself up. The UK's a long event. It's 2 weeks. And, you know, and give it the same focus. But he did, and he won it.
Yeah, he'd won a qualifying match previously, so that did give him a slight amount of time to get over what had happened in York, but it was only a very small period to readjust. Then in the last 64, he beat Joe Perry. Perry missed some chances to get over the line. He missed three pinks in that match. And then, of course, he's involved in the tournament. York slowly recedes from his memory, or at least the disappointment is diluted. Gets involved in another event, and yeah, I think it was tremendous he won that. I mean, when you think about it, Dave, my big worry in snooker over the last two or three years, and I think you share this as well, has been the fact that we've not had any young players coming through. You've even had the ridiculousness of certain people in the media describing, you know, 28 and 29-year-olds as young players, when you consider that people like John Higgins and Ronnie O'Sullivan were established stars by the age of 23, 24, maybe even younger than that. So I think the big worry I had about snooker was no one was coming through to win events. And back to back, you had a 24-year-old and a 26-year-old. Now, that's great in itself. But then there's the geographical significance. A massive market, i.e. continental Europe with Luca, and a massive market, perhaps the biggest of all, the People's Republic of China with Zhao Jingtong. So from a snooker growth perspective, that was nirvana.
I think that's why, like, we'll come to the last event now, but if you look at the winners this season, it's actually been perfect in terms of the different narratives. You've got Dave Gilbert, who's been, I suppose he was a journeyman for a while, who's broken through as a winner. You've got Mark Williams, who's a very popular sort of old-timer, who, you know, everyone likes, and he's very relatable. He's won one. Mark Allen's won on his home soil. You've got Neil Robertson, who's got this great backstory coming from Australia, you know, got married in the summer, all the rest of it. He's won one. Judd Trump, who's the talisman at the moment, he's won one. We've got a new Chinese player who's won one. A young Belgian from continental Europe has won one. And then, last tournament of them all, we've got the biggest name in the sport back in the winner's enclosure, Ronnie O'Sullivan, who, you know, for most of that final was hanging on with Neil Robertson, but at the end produced an extraordinary display of snooker to win it.
Well, for most of the tournament. It actually reminded me a lot of a tournament that O'Sullivan, in his much younger days, lost when he was famously beaten by Steve Davis in the Masters final from well in front O'Sullivan was. Davis produced his best snooker of that event, by far his best snooker of that event, right at the end to win. And that's exactly what happened with Ronnie. 7-5 down at the last interval, I walked into the commentary box and he was sitting backstage alone with his thoughts, thinking what to do. He definitely changed his approach, his cue action, his address, his stance even. I don't know what happened, but he found something. And then, you know, those five frames he won from 7-5 down took 50 minutes to win. It was really vintage stuff from O'Sullivan, and I think it could lead to much better things in the new year. I think he was definitely lacking in confidence. He'd lost five consecutive finals before that, and half a dozen finals on the trot, O'Sullivan losing, that would have been incomprehensible. But now he's got the monkey off his back.
He has this strategy, and it's something that he feels works for him, which is to tell everybody that he doesn't care and it's a holiday and I'm just having fun. Now, he's entitled to say that if he thinks it's a strategy that works. If anyone genuinely believes it, then they need a reality check. I mean, we saw that last frame of the afternoon when he played on for the two snookers. You know, if you don't care, you don't do that. And his competitive juices, you know, got flowing at the end. But I go back to what I said earlier about what he said about Neil Robertson. That is one that got away for him. You know, he was in control. He should have been 6-2 up in the afternoon. He was by far the better player. So while we credit Ronnie, you know, Neil, if he looks back on that, I think we'll be very disappointed.
Very disappointed. It really was one that got away. You know, you can trace it right back to the third frame. He missed a very simple red to the green pocket when he was on the verge of leading 3-0. Lots of other chances went astray. Everyone remembers, of course, and quite rightly, the eighth frame when O'Sullivan got those two absolutely snorting snookers and then cleared up with 39 to win it on the black. Then it's 7-5. You think, well, OK, Robertson might have weathered the storm. But, of course, there's always that possibility. I actually went into the commentary box and said, when Ronnie O'Sullivan's 7-5 down in a race to 10, if you think about it, he could be an hour away from victory. And I wasn't far off. I didn't really believe it when I said it, to be honest. But I thought it was worth noting because in the past he's done this to many other opponents. And I think it's absolutely fantastic for snooker that he did this. Look at the viewing figures on RTV4. They were really, really good. And as you say, it was just one more really good story in a whole line of them.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's not just the snooker, which has been excellent all year. It's the different narratives and the different personalities that people can latch onto, and I think for that reason the game's in a very good state. But let's briefly look ahead to next year. You know, we live in a time of uncertainty. We can't really predict for sure what's going to happen. We don't know, for example, about the German events, where they're going to be. We don't know if there's going to be crowds early on in the year at the British events. We just don't know. But I guess we could say what we hope for. I guess what we hope for certainly is we get back to China. You know, we miss those big events, big money tournaments, and a very vibrant market for snooker. And we hope, I suppose, things just kind of get back to normal again.
Yeah, with regards to China specifically, I think the best chance over there, from the way I'm looking at it, purely logistically, the best chance might well be the Shanghai Masters, which is an invitation event, very prestigious, very lucrative. I think it's 24 players, and a lot of those players are Chinese. So you wouldn't have a great overseas influx. I think Shanghai is a real sporting hub over there, and it might be easier as the first event back to put that on. I certainly don't know the ins and outs of snooker politics. You'd have to ask Jason Ferguson about that. But yeah, it would be great to get back there. Of course it would. One real positive is that when we went into the first lockdown back in 2020, we didn't know what was going to happen with anything in the world, let alone the small matter of snooker. Now I think we do know that at the very worst, these events will take place, even if it is behind closed doors. So snooker followers will be able to watch on TV. And I think that's a crumb of comfort, don't you, Dave?
Oh, totally, yeah. No, the show will continue. It's just in what sort of way it continues. Finally, then, let's just wild prediction. Who's going to be world champion in 2022?
OK, well, I'm going to say someone we've talked about. Mind you, we've talked about everybody. So that's a pretty wide range of people. I think Neil Robertson will be really motivated to prove everyone wrong, that he's got this thing about the Crucible, he can't get over it. I think he'll go into that massively well prepared, and I think he's got a great chance, I really do. But, you know, Judd Trump, Mark Selby, Ronnie O'Sullivan, John Higgins, Kyron Wilson, he's tailor-made for the Crucible. There are so many potential winners, but I will say Neil Robertson.
Well, I've got two. One who I fancy to do well this year, not necessarily win it, but go a long way, is Yanbing Tao, because I think he's got the right sort of mentality for the Crucible. But I'm going to stick my neck out in terms of the winner, and I'm going to go for Mark Selby. So get your money on Mark Selby. We're members of the Sports Social Network. Check out their other podcasts. You can email us, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. We've got through 2021. It's been an enjoyable year on the snooker tour, And I'm sure next year will be as well. And let's hope, as I say, we have crowds and we have plenty of tournaments and plenty of different destinations as well. For now, though, Phil, Happy New Year to you and indeed to all listeners.
Happy New Year to you, Dave, and thanks for listening in, and continue to do so, please. In 2022, Dave Hendon here does a fantastic job, not just on this podcast, in providing statistics for all of us when we're in the commentary box throughout the year. And honestly, they are invaluable.
Well, that's your Amazon voucher coming your way. Thank you for that, and we'll see you next year. Sports Social Podcast Network.